This is in Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 2. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, O Lord. Renew them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. And as we were singing that last song, open our eyes, Lord. I want to see Jesus. Open my ears. It's this idea of the craving of the soul to really get to know our Creator. And I believe that was Habakkuk's desire here as well. And so, Lord, as we open up your word this morning, help us to dig deep and to assess our own relationships, both with you and with other people. God, I pray that you challenge us through your word. Help me, God, to articulate in a way that your truth comes to life. But also more than that, God, that your Holy Spirit would just do a fantastic transformational work this morning. And God, we just pray alongside your will that what you've already started in the lives of all of those here gathered this morning, God, that you will continue to work that out until it's complete. Even in the midst of the unknown, God, as we discover some of that, God, in the unknown, it's where we really place our faith. God, we love you. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for calling us your sons, your daughters, and giving us just opportunity, a tremendous amount of freedom and fellowship that we have. Thank you for the joy, God, that you restore in us, even in fellowship, even just rubbing shoulders with each other and singing glorious songs unto yourself, God. It restores joy unto us. God, we love you. Thanks for loving us. Thanks for dying for us. Thanks for providing so much that we take for granted. In your son's name, amen. As I said, we're going to go to Habakkuk. Habakkuk was in a period of time. He was a contemporary of Jeremiah and Zechariah. If you want to geek out a little bit, it was set in a time period when the great empire of Babylon was taking over the known earth at that time. They wiped out Assyria, which had wiped out Israel in the north, and they had severed ties of any attempt that Egypt would make to align themselves with Judah. And so at about 600, right around 600 B.C., the great battle of Carchemish, where Nebuchadnezzar's really his claim to fame started there. And so that's where we pick up, and Habakkuk's living in this time frame where he sees the international intrigue that's going on. But more than that, he sees the depravity of Judah, what was left of Israel, this southern kingdom. And really it was pretty much just Jerusalem at that time that had been rescued from Assyria and now Babylon. And he sees this impending doom coming, but he sees, man, God, look what is going on in Judah. And it parallels maybe our own postmodern, post-Christian world that we live here in the West. Maybe even more so. I mean, he saw the despair, the debauched life that the Judeans were living. And he was crying out to God, how long, God, are you going to put up with this? And I don't know how many of that is your cry sometimes of, you know, you watch the news. How long, God, are you going to put up with this? And so that is Habakkuk's cry, really his complaint, as we begin Habakkuk. I'm fascinated. Maybe you remember as a kid, it was always fun to shake up a 2-liter bottle of pop and then let someone else open it. It's not so fun anymore as a parent, but or I think you could put like a Mentos in a Coke bottle and it would kind of surface to the top, one of those chemical reactions, bringing things to the, or even just, you know, I got a little 2-year-old girl and she loves pop. And it's just fun hearing her say pop. And so she'll watch the little bubbles rise to the top. And just that surfacing, that bringing from what's within, bringing it out is fascinating to me. And my parents and my brother-in-law out east in West Virginia recently sold some mineral rights to their land because of the kind of a second boom that's happening out east, at least where my folks live, and it's fracking. Some of you are familiar with that idea, and it's where they take water, and in my folks' case, it's water from the river, and they mix it with a little sand and a little chemical, and then they pressurize it thousands of feet deep into the soil in order to frack and break the rock to open up fissures so that gas and oil can be extracted, raising these national treasures. But you would never know that. All you see on the surface is this mess. You see these trucks running back and forth and newly paved roads, and the locals are like, why are you ruining my road, right? All you see is what's going on the surface, but beneath that, this fracking that's going on is surfacing something tremendous, a national treasure, really. And I believe that's what God is doing in our own lives sometimes as He is refining us. There's things that are going on the surface that that we don't understand. It's hard for us to even explain sometimes the difficulties that are there. But God is in control and He's trying to surface. He's fracturing in our lives these treasures, these characteristics in our lives that are like gold. It's like silver and bronze when we really see them for what they are. And God is ridding us from the wood, hay and stubble, if you will. So we pick up on Habakkuk. He was not only weary of the international intrigue, but even more so the state of affairs of Jerusalem. They were in need of a societal reformation and transformation as individuals. And he begins his dialogue with God by registering a complaint. It's an honest complaint. The streets of Jerusalem were not being policed. Violence was not being held in check. The situation looked hopeless unless God intervened. Oppression from within the walls and outside the walls. He didn't seem to like his job as the Lord's prophet. And there was concern about the fairness and injustice that was going on from the alleys and the political posts. Let's pick up Habakkuk. The oracle that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you don't listen? Or cry to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife. Conflict abounds. Therefore the law is paralyzed. Justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. So this is kind of an honest complaint from Habakkuk. And as we spy in on him, we see a very real, a very raw. We almost say, how dare you talk to God that way, right? But he had a real relationship with God here, and I think honesty in a real relationship fits. It's key to any real friendship. It goes beyond just an acquaintance and a friend of a friend. When we have a real relationship with someone, we can be honest. See, we can see some of that dialogue throughout the Old Testament, some of the New Testament, the way that they interact with God. Are we free to be transparent and vulnerable and honest? I believe we can all relate to this type of relationship. God desires us to be real, to be honest with Him, to be humble as well and honoring to Him. But to be honest is key, I think, in understanding this relationship, this dynamic that Habakkuk is having with God and with each other as we have dialogue with each other, that honesty is a key component of that. Many of you know that when I first moved to Park Rapids many years ago, I worked at a restaurant here in town and for many years, mainly as a maintenance guy. There was a gal that was hired about the same time that I was, and I believe she had dropped out of high school, but she had one of these bubbly personalities that you just couldn't get away from. But it didn't take long, about a month or two into it, as our acquaintance turned into a friendship, she began to share with me how she didn't like her job, and she hid that pretty well. But how things were just not as they appeared on the surface. She was having some difficulty at home. In fact, she had moved in with a boyfriend. And she was really oppressed is what was happening. And she was going through some deep challenges. She didn't think it was fair that some of her friends that she had were now going off to college and she didn't have that experience. Home life was rough. Situation wasn't very promising. And she rallied around the motto, life isn't fair. How many of you ever heard that from your grandkids? Right? We hear it from Habakkuk here. We hear it from her. And sometimes that resonates in our own life. That's not fair. That is just not fair. That was Habakkuk's cry. Life's not fair. Although a little juvenile, it was hers and his honest assessment of the situation. And when we have that vulnerable relationship with others, not only are we free to be honest with them, but we also need to be free to hear their honest reply, right? We need to position ourselves. If that friendship is a real friendship, we also position ourselves to hear their honest feedback, their honest reply to our complaint. Well, Habakkuk 1, 5 through 11, God does just that to Habakkuk. Verse 5, look at the nations and watch, be utterly amazed, for I'm going to do something in your days, Habakkuk, that you would not believe, even if you were told. I'm raising up the Babylonians, the ruthless, impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth to seize dwelling places not their own. They are a feared, dreaded people. They are a law to themselves and promote their own honor. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves at dusk. Their cavalry gallops headlong. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like vultures swooping to devour. They all come bent on violence. Their hordes advance like a desert wind and gather prisoners like sand. They deride kings and scoff at rulers. They laugh at fortified cities, build earthen ramps and capture them. Then they sweep past like the wind and go on. Guilty men whose own strength is their God. Guilty men whose own strength is their God, little g. He's telling Habakkuk, you think this is bad. You think you're oppressed now. Wait for what's about to unload on you. You don't see it coming. This fracting that's happening beneath the surface is about to make itself known. And so the Lord's honest reply was not necessarily what Habakkuk was expecting. In answer to your complaint and assessment of your situation, I'll let you know what's really going on. I'm raising up the ruthless, this godforsaken nation of Babylonians to clean house in Judah. If you think you and your people are oppressed, wait until you see the depth of depression that is sweeping your way. Life is not fair as we know it. The hard truth is that we are limited in our finite perspective, right? We are limited in our finite perspective to see all that God is orchestrating to accomplish. What he deems to be fair, just, even right. The disciplining and refining of his people along the way. It's hard for us sometimes to imagine that unless we have had kids and grandkids where discipline really comes in. Sometimes punishment and God's wrath, but then also discipline for our good. And sometimes even the good stuff God wants to knock off because he wants something better and best in our life. And so Habakkuk is wrestling with this not fair mentality. God, where is your justice? So because M, that was a lady's name here at the restaurant, she replied with an honest assessment and tested the limits of our friendship is what I did. Is I told M, you're headed down a slippery slope. If you're not careful, this oppression that is overwhelming you is going to eat you up. If you're not careful, the choices that you will now make will make things even more difficult, decisions that will have steeper, even grave consequences. And so she cringed a little bit. She was willing to listen to some of this feedback, but the next thing blew her away. I asked her, because I am still limited in my understanding perspective, I was prompted by God to say, hey, how can I pray for you? She looked at me a little weird. I don't think anyone had ever said that to her before. But testing our friendship, she realized that I cared about where she was heading in this oppressive state. And so she, after a few moments, gave me a couple little prayer requests. And as the months went by, I would ask her from time to time, how's it going? How can I pray for you? And she would fill me in her little list of things to pray about and give me those updates. How is your friendship horizontally with other people? And can you test the limits of it in honesty? And can you receive back from it in honesty? And the same way with God. How is that tested out? Habakkuk signs off on God being God and then registers a second complaint, but softens his dialogue with humility. Verse 12. O Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, we will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O rock, you have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrong. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made men like the fish of the sea, like sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up with his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net, he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? God, come on, God. You have to care about us here. He likens them to this Babylonian, these people who are worse than we are. God, do you really? Do you care less about your people, Judah? I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. What answer I am to give to this complaint. Or another translation says, what to answer when I am rebuked. He understood his place. He understood his position. And he still registered this honest complaint to God, but there's some humility involved in it. He was waiting for the rebuke. He was waiting for God's reply this time to be put in his place. Habakkuk kind of blown away that God would seemingly favor the vile, more contemptible Babylon over Judah. It's kind of a, are you kidding me? This jaw-dropping, God, are you being serious about this? Yet he holds out this little bit of hope, knowing or trusting that God would have more to say than simply putting Judah in checkmate. He finds himself in the worst case scenario. Habakkuk finally saw the bottom of his despair and the nation's deprivation without God. How many of us have had to see or even experience the worst case scenario before we humbly submitted to God? Sometimes God allows us to experience that worst case scenario. Even though we can't see it, we got to trust that God is still in control. Prince David, running for his life. Job, though he slay me, yet I praise him. Daniel in the fiery furnace. Joseph in the cistern, or furthermore in jail. They're all examples of people that were fully surrendered to God, but they were refined through the fire. The fracting that was going on in their life, they held out for the trust factor that God was trying to accomplish something greater in their life. M had been spiraling down in this clinical depression as I visited with her from month to month, and she finally had this meltdown really at work. And it all kind of encapsulated this day that she'd shared that she had gotten kicked out of her boyfriend's house and had to move in with her mom, which meant that she had to give up her work at the restaurant. And then kind of under her breath with this dangerous look on her face, she said, "I can't believe I'm pregnant." And so it's this oppression that led to depression that was leading to some kind of obsession or some kind of shortened life. There were all kinds of red flags going off as she had shared this with me. And I charged her. I said, at the end of work, we're going to finish this conversation, just because it was too dangerous, too volatile at that point. And so she agreed to finish the conversation after work. And with humble anticipation, she waited for my reaction. She wanted to know. It was almost a plea for help. This kind of humble reply she was waiting for. What is your worst case scenario? Have you ever lived through it? Are you going through it right now? It's with soft humility, and I really mean that. It's with soft humility that we traverse this life together, that we all go through, and if you haven't yet, you will go through some difficulties and maybe a worst case scenario. And can I just step aside and apologize for any leadership or any church or any engagement you've had with the church body that has not shared mercy with you in the midst of that time, that you felt the criticism of the church rather than the grace of Jesus Christ? Can I just apologize for that? Because I think what I would like us to do as a church is to help people focus on Jesus, because he's the ultimate sympathizer in those situations. Yes, God's wrath, punishment, discipline is very real. But in those moments, how do we supply mercy? How do we show grace? How do we love those individuals? And may that be kind of the apex of our conversation there. Habakkuk wrestled with his worst case circumstance and yet held out for God's reaction. Habakkuk 2:2. Then the Lord replied, write down. So here's his answer. Write down the revelation, make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it, for the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end. It will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. Habakkuk, I'm going to answer your prayer request. It's going to come. And Babylon's going to get theirs in their own time. And he begins to talk about them. See, he is puffed up. His desires are not upright. He's talking about Babylon here and that kingdom who is violent and forcing themselves on other nations. But here's the caveat. The righteous will live by faith. And this is the theme that's picked up again in the New Testament and again in the New Testament. The righteous shall live by faith. There's these little spurts of hope that God has given to Habakkuk along this conversation. But indeed, wine betrays him, talking about Babylon. He is arrogant, never at rest, because he's greedy as the grave, and like death, is never satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying? He's going to get his, is what he jumps into these woe factors. Woe to him who piles stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. So he gained his power by unjust means. How long must this go on? Will not your debtors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their victim because you have plundered many nations. The peoples who are left with plunder will plunder you. For you have shed man's blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Think about the way that you came to power and what you've accumulated. It was unjust, and you're going to have to answer for that. Woe to him who builds his realm by unjust gain, to set his nest on high, to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house, fortifying your life. The stones of the wall will cry out. The beams of the woodwork will echo it. So woe that you accumulated your power this way, and woe because you built your family up this way, and woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and established a town by crime. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, and the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. It's going to happen. It's like wave after wave, woe after woe. Not only did you empower yourself, built your house up on it, now you've infected the city, and now we're going to see he infects the culture. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink and be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming around to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence you have done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. For you have shed man's blood. You have destroyed land and cities and everyone in them. Of what value is an idol, since a man has carved it, or an image that teaches lies? For he who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There's no breath in it, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. Wow, what a reply from the Lord of Habakkuk's complaint. This really put Habakkuk in a spot. God silenced Habakkuk, as he had done with Job and the patriarchs, as he had done with David and the kings, as he would do with the disciples, as they described, who is this that even the wind and waves obey him? As God will do with us when we are honest and humble in our dialogue with him, so that multiple times we should see the woe factor. Now, the woe factor is not to be and is to be distinguished from the wow factor and the awe factor. So woe, woe, woe. God is all powerful. He's going to do and accomplish what he wants to do. And he wants to bring us along. He wants to refine us. Wow. And we are to be in awe of that. Following work, Em and I picked up where we had left off, kind of the woe factor. Baby on board. The woe factor. Though she tried to make light of it, I pressed in for the baby's sake to make sure that she wouldn't do anything stupid, like take the baby's life or take her own life. The father was out of the picture. She had found the bottom. A life humbled by circumstances where giving up control was in the balance. It was her worst case scenario and on the edge of hopelessness. Once again, I was prompted to pray for her, but it was a little different. It was in the moment, and it was out loud and in public. It was an immediate circumstance that needed God's intervention, from this oppression to depression that really needed some intercession right in the middle of that moment. Little did I know that was the last time I would ever hear from him. She received my reply, kind of my gentle rebuke, similar to how God had replied to Habakkuk. And really, that's the last time we hear God answer Habakkuk in his book. And in the same way, that was the last time that I'd ever got to hear from him. She had to quit her job and moved on. We don't always get the full answer to the question. We are to understand the woe factor, and to be wowed by God, and to be in awe of God. And that's really what Habakkuk does here. He humbly accepts the Lord's answer. It produces in him this honorable discharge. It's an amazing reaction that he now has. He's had a couple complaints, and now he has this, wow, awe. And so you see a prayer, this psalm, if you will, elevates this sense of wow and awe. Habakkuk 3:1, let's see his wow and awe. A prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, on Shigaleth. That's just a musical connotation. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. O Lord, renew them in our day, in our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. So balance this out, God. Give me some understanding. God, you've already given me some understanding, so make it come to pass what you said that is going to happen. God came from Timnah, the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and his praise filled the earth. His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand. Where his power was hidden, plague went before him. Pestilence followed his steps. He stood, shook the earth. He looked, made the nations tremble. The ancient mountains crumbled. The age-old hills collapsed. His ways are eternal. I saw the tents of Cushan in distress, and the dwellings of Midian in anguish. So he's recalling this Creator God and his all-powerfulness from creation all the way up to the localized of the nations that were surrounding Judah. Were you in anger, Were you angry with the rivers, O Lord? Was your wrath against streams? Did you rage against the sea when you rode with your horses and your victorious chariots? You uncovered your bow. You called for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. Torrents of water swept by. The deep roared and lifted its waves on high. Sun, moon stood still in the heavens. At the glint of your flying arrows, at the lightning of your flashing spear, in wrath you strode through the earth, and in anger you threshed the nations. You came out to deliver your people, to save your anointed one. You crushed the leader of the land, wickedness. You stripped him from head to foot. Remember, he said, in wrath, remember mercy. And so that's what we see here, God, that you are an all-consuming God, but even so, you came out to deliver your people, to save your anointed one, that he came as a rescuer. With his own spear you pierced his head, when his warriors stormed out to scatter us, gloating as though about to devour the wretched. You were in hiding. You trampled the sea with your horses, churning great waters. Now this is poetic, and it takes us a little while to digest all of that, but I wanted us to get the big picture here. This dialogue, back and forth, almost banter between Habakkuk and God. And the way that we would see God, even one of the songs we sang was about a friend, calling Jesus as our friend, a master and friend that we're going to leave on. And so this idea of friendship, when it's tested, do we see honesty? Do we see humility? And do we see this honoring that Habakkuk was displaying here at the end of his chapter? So he recollects all the wonders that God had done in the past, proving to be just, honorable over the long haul, displaying mercy even through days of wrath, of punishment, or whether it's discipline or the pruning. Habakkuk had a better understanding of God's refinery, this fracting process that happens in our own life. And through the course of the conversation, he's like, okay, God, I get it. Now bring it to pass, what you've already said is going to happen. And although Habakkuk had not yet seen the final outcome, the many days of struggle were ahead, he trusted, even rejoiced in God's master plan. His confidence was restored. His security was all the more stable, and he anticipated God to once again bring to pass the greatest good in the fullness of his glory. So, where is our confidence? Where do we rely on honesty in our friendships? To be honest, to be humble, to be honoring in our relationships with God and with others. God desires us to be honest, humble, and honoring. And likewise, he is proving to be honest, humble, and honoring. Let's pray. God, I feel like, God, that we have covered so much ground here. And God, it's my desire, I think it's yours, God, to really prick our heart, our conscience here this morning, to ask the question, in our relationships, are we being honest, and are we being humble, and are we honoring others in our relationships? God, if we're not, even right now, bring to the surface, infract in our lives those people that we have not been honest with, that maybe we've spoke the truth but not in love, or maybe we've loved but not spoke the truth. Or God, maybe it's we haven't been humble in our conversations with these people, or with you, God. Maybe we've been pointing our finger at you and not been humble, and in our final reply of God, put me in my place. Make me understand. Help me to be patient in the long haul. And God, help me to be honoring. May this not steal my joy. May the depths of the difficulties that I'm going through, worst case scenarios, may it not steal my joy. God, so that I will trust in you. God, so that we will trust in you as a people, so that we can make you look good. In your son's name. Amen. Before we close up, I wanted to share one little story. We just got back from our mission trip with the students. We had went to through the Dakotas, Nebraska, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. We ended in Montana and came back that way. It's always been my desire to expose the students to Williston, where the Bakken boom is going on. If you're familiar with that, there's a great national treasure being resurrected over in North Dakota. And so I wanted to expose our students to kind of life around there, kind of the Wild West, and are those stories really true? And so we drove back through and made our way to Williston. And in Williston, a couple things happened as we came through town. And one, we just noticed the man camps from a distance, so that kind of confirmed some of the craziness that was going on there. But as we got closer to town, what I always thought was, if you really want to get to know a town, there's two extremes you can go to. You can go visit the bar or the church. But I always thought you could go visit the local Walmart. That'll tell you all about the town, right? And so we went to the local Walmart, and I'd heard some stories about Walmart that that they would bring things out on pallets, and before they could even get it on the shelves, people would take them. And they had just underwent some new management there. And so two things stood out to me when I walked in. One was the extremely wide aisles that they had in order to kind of contain the volume of people that would walk through this Walmart. And by the time we had gotten there, everything was really pretty clean. The pallet story was a thing of the past. I think it had happened around Christmas time, so it was a little extreme. The second thing I noticed was the diversity of ethnicities. I mean, there was every tribe and tongue imaginable there. As we went down through, I kind of made a circle around, heard different languages and just different ethnicities, as far as you can imagine. I made the circle and was about to get some water and ice. We fed our kids more than that, but that's what we needed at that point, was some water and ice. And was just about to leave, and someone said my name, Phil Campbell. And so I looked around. I thought it was one of the students, like, in the clothes rack messing with me. And as I looked a little farther, I heard, "Phil Campbell, what are you doing in Williston?" And so I looked, and here's this grocery cart coming at me with two little kids in it and kind of a teenage girl off the corner of their mom's arm. And I thought, I had been praying for M for 16 years. And here she was coming towards me. How often does that happen, that we get to see some finality to some of our prayers? For 16 years I've been praying for M. And I was listening to her conversation. I was listening to her dialogue. But really what I was keying in on, let me know the name of your kids. I want to know the age of this teenager. And that was the child in question. And wouldn't you know it, I can't tie this up in a real pretty bow and tell you that M knows Jesus and that she's following Jesus and all of that. But before I left, she anticipated it. And so I said, "M, what can I pray for?" And she gave me her little list of things. So that's a raw relationship, right? A friendship that we have with each other. Being able to be honest, being able to be humble in those circumstances, and being honorable in those circumstances. And so how do we do that with one another? Man, God says people will know us by our love for one another. And so there's just an example of it. We don't always get to see the hindsight of those relationships. But man, when God gives us a little snippet of when we obey Him and just being faithful, God is the one that trumps all of that and is faithful in all those circumstances. So as we come to kind of close out this last, as Frank comes, I think this song that we end on is a perfect song as far as articulating our desire for God and understanding Him as master and friend. And